everyone. This is episode 5 of the Activate Podcast with James Orsini. My name is Eric English, and first off, thanks for spending some time with me today. Now, James has quite the story, both personally and professionally. Currently, James is the COO of VaynerMedia and works alongside the founder and CEO, Gary Vaynerchuk. Now, VaynerMedia represents some of the world's leading brands, and Gary is a rock star on social media. However, what's more impressive to me about James is not that he works for VaynerMedia or alongside Gary Vaynerchuk. It's his impact as a dad and his willingness to inspire and mentor those around him, both when it comes to business and just helping them live a better life. So without further ado, let's get into the conversation with James. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 5 of the Activate Podcast. Today we have James Orsini with VaynerMedia, and I'm so excited, James, to spend a few minutes with you this morning. And like I was telling you a minute ago, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes of your time to just have a discussion around some of the things around business, around personal life, and what's kind of led you to where you are now. So thanks, James.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to join you here on Activate, Eric, and hope to impart some knowledge to your listeners and such as I have, I give to you.
Perfect. Well, where we're going to start, James, is the origin story of James and what took you from the big agency to now where you are in your leadership capacity at VaynerMedia.
Yeah, the funny part is the origin is really in public accounting. I'm a CPA by trade. I was an auditor. When I was at KPMG, my client was a Saatchi subsidiary. And I got introduced to the world of advertising and media. I remember sitting in a cubicle and saying, hey, I could see myself in a creative environment like this someday. I left public accounting. I went to work for Wall Street. I did what a lot of guys did in the 80s and chased money. I was at Goldman Sachs for a couple of years and really knew that that just wasn't for me. And I got a call one day while at Goldman from a guy, a mentor of mine, a guy by the name of Marty Franken. And he said, hey, James, I had worked for Marty at KPMG. He said, the Saatchi brothers just bought a single public relations firm and they're going to create a worldwide company. And if someday, if you leave Goldman Sachs, someday you'll be the CFO of that worldwide company, but you got to leave Goldman, which was not what people were doing in the 80s. And I took a chance, and within 5 years, we built the fifth largest public relations firm in the world, and I eventually became a global CFO overseeing 31 offices in 26 countries before I was 30. And stayed there for a while, for the better part of 10 years or so. The Saatchi entity was acquired by Publicis, and I said, you know what, this is probably a good time for a change. And I went over to Omnicom. I worked for a company called Interbrand, a big notable branding agency throughout the world. And I was their global CFO for 4 years and their North American chief operating officer for 2. And then I got a call back. I actually recognized the caller ID and I said, oh, it's Saatchi call. And they called and they had a chief operating officer role there and asked if I'd be willing to come back, but this time actually work in the Saatchi proper, general advertising company for the New York office. And I did, and I had a great run there. I stayed there for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then I said to myself, I'm ready for a total change. And I was in my late 40s, and I said, if I do something now, I really want to just do something totally different. So I became the CEO of a small publicly traded technology company. And I had never been a CEO. I'd never really been on the front line of a publicly traded company, and I didn't know anything about technology. So I said, this is the right job for me. And I took that. I was the CEO of a company called Cito Mobile. I had a 3-year contract. I stood 3.5 years. And I'm glad I did it. Proved some stuff to myself. Company is still healthy and trading on the NASDAQ, so I didn't blow anything up. you know, then I just wanted to get back into the creative and advertising space that I know and loved so much. Made a call to AJ Vaynerchuk, Gary's younger brother, who I knew. And just wanted to tell him, hey, man, I'm going to get back into the space. I'll be back in New York City, and, you know, our paths are going to cross again. And he's like, hey, did you ever meet my brother, Gary? And I said, no. And he said, you're here with my brother, Gary? I said, no. He said, well, do a quick Google search. You know, he won't be hard to find. And I did. He wasn't. And we got together, and we just kind of hit it off. And he told me what he was trying to do. He was trying to build a goal. He wanted a $500 million independent international integrated communications company. And he said, can you help me do that? And I said, yeah, I can.
That's awesome. That's you along for the ride.
Yeah. And I just had my 3-year anniversary here last week.
Congratulations. That's awesome. Goes by quick, I'm sure.
It did. I mean, especially in this company, everything is like dog years here. So, you know, 1 year here is like 7 years in the industry.
That's funny. Well, James, tell us maybe the biggest difference or some things that have been highlighted or that you've noticed when you compare your role now, your leadership role with VaynerMedia to those of the past.
Yeah, I think it's the speed at which decisions are made. You know, this is Gary has built a company that is fearless in an industry that operates in fear every day. So swift decisions are easy for us to make here, and grueling in the bigger holding company settings where, you know, you have it answers to Wall Street. You have many layers of management, all of whom you want to put a fingerprint on a particular decision. And, you know, things that took me 6 months, you know, in the holding company world, take us, you know, 6 hours here.
Huge blessing, yeah, to be able to kind of envision something and make it happen, you know, rather than, you know, sit on something for months or years.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that Gary said when he hired me. He said, look, you have 25 years of mistakes that I don't want to make. So help me avoid those potholes and speed bumps that you have fallen into so I could move faster.
Well, good. Well, tell us before we go on to, I've got something else that's going to kind of continue where you just left off. But briefly tell us what took you, James, from college to the point of working in some of the areas that we've talked about around Wall Street and some of the other big agencies. I know you're a Seton Hall alum.
I am. I still serve the university and its Board of Regents as well.
Yeah,
you know, that's important. I mean, in the paying it forward, giving it back type thing, I owe a lot to Seton Hall University. I actually was going to Lehigh and really just wasn't comfortable in the dorms. I called my dad back and saying, I want to come home. And he's like, yeah, no problem. Come on home. I'll get you a new Trans Am, because I had a scholarship to Seton Hall University. So I took the car and the scholarship, and I lived at my house and commuted into to Seton Hall. But I got a great education. I majored in accounting. I was a magna cum laude grad, and as a result, I was one of a dozen or so who were granted internship opportunity with a, you know, the then Big Eight accounting firms, and was able to have secured employment probably by, I guess it was by January or February of my senior year, knowing that I had a job. So that was great, and then I had a nice stint there, but I kind of knew I really didn't want to be a partner in a public accounting firm. I observed it. I did well. You know, I moved up rapidly, but I knew that I really didn't want to see that. I look for change precipitating conditions to make moves. So in that particular case, it was a merger between the then Main Herdman and the Pete Marwick, which has created KPMG. So You'll recall in the last segment, I told you that when Saatchi was acquired by Publicis, did the same thing with Cito. When Cito moved from the bulletin board to NASDAQ, change precipitating condition, to move, you know, make a move. So I've done that, you know, more often than not, in moving around. And, you know, I was always entrepreneurial businessman. In fact, when I interviewed in college, back then in the 80s, I had a beeper on my side because I had my own car cleaning company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my dad was like, okay, you got to make some money. What do you want to do? And my mom's like, I don't want to jeopardize his study habits. So, you know, forget about working at Macy's, you know, late nights and things like that. And he said, what do you like? I said, I like cars. So he said, great. We're going to build some garages with heat and hot water and you'll clean cars. And that's what I did. I used to wash and wax cars, and that then grew. And then I provided a personal pickup and delivery service. And on my
your 80s side hustle.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. On my college campus interview for KPMG, my beeper went off because I had a doctor's Ferrari 308 GT4 that had to be returned to him. And I'm like, listen, I'm so sorry, I got to cut the meeting short. and the interviewer, I'll never forget, Larry Jansen was the guy's name. He said, you know what? That entrepreneurial spirit has just gotten you a job. Go take the guy's car back, and you're going to work for us.
Perfect honesty, so, right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned, so when Gary brought you on, that he has these huge visions of growing the agency international, and that one of the things he mentioned was utilizing your path, your failures to prevent some of those bumps or obstacles that could perhaps be in the way of that growth. But how has a failure set you up for later success? And do you have a favorite failure?
Yeah, look, I think life is a series of learning. And in fact, I just penned an article yesterday on Medium, process before speed, right? And as you go through a process, you learn some stuff, and what you do the next time, you could do faster. You know, I think I've had several business failures, but the one I could remember was in the public relations firm when I acquired three separate PR firms in the London market, and I merged them all together, and 1 + 1 + 1 did not equal 3. It equaled 1.5 when I was done, because I didn't, you know, properly recognize that each one had a culture, and you know, one was a public affairs and one was a corporate and one was a CPG, you know, and mashing them all together was not the right thing. You know, so we were more cautious here when we acquired PureWow, you know, which was a different digital publishing offering, and you know, gently merged them in, recognizing that they had their own culture. You know, we wanted to preserve what was there and working. So, you know, that's an example of one, you know, where we moved them into our 24th floor. And, you know, my advice was, look, let them create their own little identity in the space, you know, let them paint the walls their color and hang some lights as they see fit. So it feels like them.
Mm, and
so,
yeah, and
that, you know, and that's just, yeah, one example.
Well, and that's one, like you mentioned, that fits perfectly with the acquisition that just happened. So again, embracing that failure and, you know, and recognizing that, yes, you know, we can be crawling through that, but whether or not we see it on that immediate side or later down the road, I totally believe that's what builds the entrepreneurial endurance and muscles that we have to continue to grow.
Yeah. And you know, Gary is all about growth. So, you know, he is amassing a holding company type offering. I think in the 3 years that I've been here, we've seen revenue go from 42 million to just north of 130 million. So you're talking, you know, 210% growth in that time. You know, so he, he's not hitting the brakes. That's for sure. The vision is bigger, by the day, and our job, mine and the 800 others that are around him are to help, you know, fuel that vision.
What about any weird habits, any absurd things that you love that most people wouldn't know about James?
You know, business is my hobby, and I think that's so fun. I read business books. I consume business content. People will laugh because I'll be on the beach, you know, on my condo in Florida, you know, either going to Clearwater or you know, most recently we were in the Dominican Republic, and you know, I'll have the Wall Street Journal. I'm reading business, and people are like, "Can't you detach?" And I'm like, "No, you don't understand. This is my enjoyment. It's a hobby for me. I really enjoy consuming business content and just, you know, playing the three-dimensional chess of successful business."
You unplugged by the WSJ. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. People find it so weird. Look at this guy. He can't leave work for a minute. And the fact of the matter is, that is my leisure.
That's awesome. Over the past, looking at the past few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has maybe improved your life the most?
I think, you know, Gary's introduction, or introducing me to you know, the power of social media and how fast, you know, you can get a thought out there or comment on something was really great. You know, initially when he offered me the position, I didn't say yes. I didn't say no, but I didn't say yes. And I went to see a friend and colleague of mine, and a woman from Interbrand, who we have since hired and started here last week now. And she said, "James, don't you know who he is? Like, you know, you have, you know, all that we're looking for, right? So you've been in public relations, you've been in branding, you've been in general market advertising, you've been in mobile. The only thing you're missing is sort of the digital social piece. And you know, if you get that, you're kind of what everybody's trying to be." So she's like, I know him, and I think he needs somebody like you, and I think this is a good thing. And so I walked across the street. They were on 18th and 5th, and I walked across the street to 23rd and Park here in New York City, and I accepted the offer. So that's how I got here.
So before that, you were detached or unplugged or maybe just not really into the day-to-day social.
I was naive to the power of the offering. Yeah, I mean, Gary says social is nothing more than the current state of the internet, you know, and he believes mobile is an amorphous term because everything is mobile. So, you know, he's really, it is just the eye-opening power of the internet in this latest stage and iteration is really staying close to him. What has, you know, awakened me, you know, realizing that, you know, early on you had to say what you had to say in a couple second vine or the then 160 character, you know, tweet or 140 character tweet. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you better be able to get your point across quickly.
Well, here and here's what I've loved about just for the brief period of time that we've followed each other. When I first followed you on Instagram, what I picked up on right away is people can have the tendency to emulate or maybe just try to completely copy another influencer. But that's what's refreshing about somebody like you is family is a big deal to you. And you truly document not only your life, but those important things and people that are close to you.
Yeah, and I think for me, I am active on three social platforms, and I, just a personal preference, have chosen to sort of divide it up. So Instagram is very personal, family-related postings, you know, 90% of the content. LinkedIn is certainly business postings for me. I really don't share much or any personal content on that, and Twitter are, you know, things I like. You'll see a picture of my Mustang convertible, or you'll see me applauding a Seton Hall University basketball win, you know, or just things like that. So I use the platforms separately. You know, that's just a personal preference. But people who follow me know what to look for and see in in each of those. So in a recent birthday that I had, I mean, that was all Instagram postings.
Yeah. And I didn't mention LinkedIn, but I have noticed that where your comments, even if they're brief, are obviously well thought out. So it's refreshing to see that as well, your engagement and kind of feedback to the content on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I've been fortunate. I have hundreds and hundreds of people who refer to me as their mentor, you know, and I try to be consistent. You know, people ask me, how do you get so much done in a 24-hour period? Now, obviously, that's ironic considering I work for Gary, who gets more done in any 24 hours than any human I've ever seen. But generally speaking, I still get a lot done in that same time. And it's because I am the same person, you know, I'm the same guy at work as I am at home, as I am in church, as I am at a Seton Hall board meeting. You know, I don't turn it on, you know, it's too hard to live all these different people. So I am that same guy. And as a result of that, you know, I can move faster through society. I'm not worried about, oh my God, I have the drink in my hand right now. What if somebody sees me from the Drug and Alcohol Rehabilitation Center that I sit on the board of? Like, it's just not that. So I choose not to drink. Personal mm-hmm. preference, you know, it's just, you know, just personal conviction. Nobody requires that to be the case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I just try my best to be the same consistent person. And as a result of that, it allows me to get so much more done, you know, in virtually everything that I do.
Awesome. Your kids are in college, right, James?
Yeah. So I have three. My oldest is a senior at Trinity in Hartford, and history repeats itself. So he'll take up his position at KPMG. Starting in the summer, he'll be working in the credit risk advisory practice. So he's on the consulting side, not the accounting side. I have a sophomore daughter who is at Penn State, majoring in elementary education with a minor in special ed. And then I have a junior in high school, and we're just looking around now to see which one is right for her.
That's awesome. Well, what advice are you giving your kids now as they prepare to enter the real world? And then maybe what advice should they ignore?
So here's an example of one that I just gave my son. And I said, okay, great. So you landed a great job, you know, which he worked hard to get. You know, he's right for the position. It's going to be a hard position. I said, my advice to you is to, you know, live home for 18 months. I said, you're certainly going to make enough money to be able to get out on your own. And you've been on your own living away at college. But, you know, stay home for 18 months. And I said, you have no conception of earning power right now. You don't know the difference between $25,000, $50,000, $75,000. So live home, live like you're making 25. Let's park some money on the side. And when you move out, instead of getting an apartment in the city, you know, maybe you can buy yourself a condo when you move out, you know, and if you do it right and smart, you'll get yourself a 2-bedroom and rent the other bedroom to a friend of yours for $500. So, you know, those are the types of things that, I advise from life experiences. But working here at Vayner, where I have 800 millennials, average age probably 27 to 28 years old, I've gotten a much better appreciation, you know, for how they think and how to work with them and what inspires them and you know, what's not going to take root with them. So, you know, it's something I call guided exploration. You know, they need to experience, but if I could just kind of guide them in a direction, you know, they may be well served by that guidance.
I love that. And it's kind of your version of something that we've been talking about here in our house about putting on the brakes. I mean, when we were growing up, it was what? You go to college and what do you do after that? You get a job. And then what do? You get married and then you have kids. And it was super systematic. And I think there's something to be said about, look, you got a long time. Just, you know, put on the brakes, you know, it's, you don't have to rush out and buy something. You don't have to rush out and, you know, fulfill these expectations of those around you. You know, life shouldn't be that way. So I think that's very wise, and talking to your kids.
Yeah,
about that.
I think that was great. I mean, my advice to him was, listen, don't accept the first date. They're likely going to offer you a few start dates, and you don't need to accept the first one. You know, we've been blessed by the fact that, you know, he's not graduating with college debt, you know, and, you know, because we planned right. We started that in 1989. He was born in 96. So, you know, if I can help position him with, here's my gift to you, no college debt and the right things in place where we care for myself and my wife in our older age. So you're not going to be encumbered by anything that I've done. Okay. Now do what you do right and wise and smart.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And we have these dialogues. He called me this week. Hey, Dad, I think I want to invest in some Bitcoin. I said, really? I said, with what? I said, you know, you have to have some money to invest. You know, you can't be taking some money from me. That's like saying, hey, Dad, you gave me $100. I'm going to take 20 of it because I think I can go to Vegas and, you know, Atlantic City and parlay it and try and make that 20-60. You know, when you get some earning power, if you choose to invest a portion in Bitcoin, then more power to you. But now's not the time. You know, and he heard it, recalibrated, and, you know, we moved on.
That's great advice. James, when you're feeling overwhelmed or unfocused, or maybe you've lost focus temporarily, what do you do?
Oh, I turn to prayer. I mean, I'm, you know, daily devotionals, and I have an active prayer life. You know, I know it's not in one man's hand. Now, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, but it's not me. You know, I've given that effort up a long time ago, which is why, you know, I'm not stressed. I don't live, you know, on the edge. I don't need vices to take the edge off. You know, I just have a calming influence in my life, and, you know, I don't really proselytize anybody else, but I'm happy and open to share anytime anybody asks.
Mm, well, that's awesome. So I also am in daily prayer, daily devotion, and, you know, from the standpoint of creating that internal peace that I think is so required in, you know, a world that's so fast, raising kids and, you know, again, the speed of social and the engagement that happens once the world comes alive can be super distracting and can create unneeded anxiety if you don't have that anchor each morning or night or whenever it is on a regular basis.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody gets through anything. Yeah, certainly having kids and rearing children, you know, without a go-to solution, without the ability to you know, put it on some big shoulders and say, hey, listen, you carry this, you advise me, you give me the wisdom, you speak to me in a still soft voice, you know, you direct, because on the surface, this is too big.
Well, how do you define happiness, and what do you believe to be your purpose is here on earth?
Well, I can tell you, it was so funny. I remember when I was getting married, and I was getting into the limo from my house, and my mother was screaming at the front door, James. I said, what? She said, remember, if the woman's happy, you're all happy. If the woman's miserable, you're all miserable. And I took that to heart, man. And I do whatever I can, to keep, my wife, Joanne, and my household happy, because it's a place, that, you know, I love returning to every night. We just love being together, as a family. We absolutely love spending time. My favorite thing to do is spending time with my wife and children, you know, in whatever venue that is. It could be, you know, sharing an old movie, with kids who haven't seen some. It was so funny. my daughter was doing some Christmas shopping at a department store, and you know, she's young, so I guess that was sensed, although she had a pocket full of money from her allowance and stuff. But she said, you know, they were mean to me. They didn't treat me nice. And I said, they were mean to you? Well, let's watch Pretty Woman together. Let me show you how that played out.
Yeah. So
we ran that old movie, and it was a great awakening, you know, for her in that. You know, that's how I keep it all balanced. My, you know, I just enjoy being around serving. You know, I'm a servant leader, so I absolutely love serving and helping others, you know, putting a smile on their face where we can. So, you know, and I'm active on, I serve on the board of Seton Hall, as you know. I serve on the board of something called the Griffin Bridges Foundation, which is for academically gifted, financially challenged inner city boys. We scholar them into to the one of the oldest college prep schools in New Jersey, and then they all go on to higher scholared education. And then I sit on the board of something called Renovation House, which is a drug and alcohol rehabilitation center for men that has an enormous 85% success rate for those that actually get through the program.
Wow, that's outstanding, very inspiring. James, we talked about a couple of social media channels, but where can we stop by and say hi or follow what you're doing? Where are you maybe most active for conversation on social?
Yeah, I'm probably most active at Jimmy the Pencil on Twitter, I'm also just James Orsini on LinkedIn as well.
Perfect. And we'll link all of these up on the podcast show notes to follow. James, I really appreciate your time. I was inspired, and I truly believe the listeners of the Activate podcast are going to be inspired and really think that your content today is going to add value to their lives. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you so much, Eric, for giving me the time to share. Appreciate it.
For sure.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Eric again. I really hope today's show demonstrated what it looks like to live life with a positive frame of mind, what kind of results you get when you work hard for life goals, and how important it is to seek wisdom from leaders and others that you respect. I'll include additional information on James, including his social links, in the podcast show notes. From there, you can stop by and say hello to James and follow him on his journey. Thank you again for tuning in today. In each episode, we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you reach your greatest goals. And again, I'd be super grateful if you would subscribe to and share the Activate podcast on iTunes or whatever platform you use. And you can also check out EnglishEric.com.